Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in this segment we're going to continue with a line of inquiry that I've been engaging in one form or another for quite some time. A number of years ago, I suggested that the projection by various military strategic thinkers that earthquakes, storms, and other natural disasters would become weapons of mass destruction in the 21st century was approaching reality. In fact, I suggested in the late 1980s that earthquake-generating technology might very well have become an operational reality. This was emphatically a speculative line of inquiry at the time, and what we're going to do in the next two half-hour segments is to carry that speculative line of inquiry somewhat further, because indeed, there is information now to suggest that there is much more reason to suppose that that speculative line of inquiry has in fact become reality. Portions of the next two half-hour segments will be review for veteran and regular listeners. However, some of the material, including some very dramatic material, will be new. Now, again, when one talks about the possibility of earthquakes being used as weapons, that is certainly going to cause people to roll their eyes. They're going to say, I'm sorry, Sonny, we're all out of candy. And I can appreciate that. The fact of the matter is, however, that projections of using earthquakes and other natural disasters as weapons of destruction in the 21st century has been around for quite some time. And in fact, the use of environmental modification as a weapon of war was the focal point of a treaty between the U.S. and the former Soviet Union in the late 1970s. Research credit on the following goes to a listener. This is from Documents on Disarmament, 1978, put out by the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, and it was released by the U.S. Government Printing Office in October of 1980. And specifically, this is United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency Publication 107. Again, U.S. Government Printing Office released 1980. And in this document, there is the text of a letter from former Secretary of State Vance, Cyrus Vance, to then-President Jimmy Carter on August 31st, 1978, and this is submitting the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Uses of Environmental Modification Techniques. And again, this letter from then-Secretary of State Cyrus Vance to then-President Jimmy Carter, 8/31/78. The letter reads in part, this convention, signed on behalf of the United States on May 18, 1977, in other words, as I speak on June 1, 1997, more than 20 years ago, beginning again, this convention, signed on behalf of the United States on May 18, 1977, is the product of a number of initiatives, the first of which was taken more than 5 years ago. In July of 1972, the Subcommittee on Oceans and International Environment of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations conducted hearings on Senate Resolution 281, expressing the sense of the Senate that the United States should seek the agreement of other governments to a treaty prohibiting the use of environmental or geophysical modification activity as a weapon of war. On February 22, 1973, Senate Resolution 281 was reintroduced as Senate Resolution 71, which was passed on July 11, 1973, by a vote of 82-10. In early 1974, at the request of the President, the Department of Defense carried out a review of the military aspects of weather modification and other environmental modification techniques. This review was followed by an interagency study of possible international restraints on these techniques. And I would note that that study was taken out in 1973. Skipping ahead in this document, there is a quote from Article 2 of the treaty that the United States signed on May 18, 1977. The document reads in part, while the convention does not prohibit the hostile uses of environmental modification techniques, the hostile use of environmental modification techniques having effects over a smaller area of shorter duration and less severity than set forth in the understanding, it is the view of the United States that the convention should have the effect of eliminating the danger of environmental warfare because it prohibits all significant hostile use of environmental modification techniques. However, the United States is prepared to re-examine this limitation on the scope of the convention at the review conference or possibly before. Article 2 defines the term, quote, environmental modification techniques, unquote, as, again quoting, any technique for changing through the deliberate manipulation of natural processes, the dynamics, composition, or structure of the Earth, including its biota, lithosphere, hydrosphere, and atmosphere, or of outer space. The understanding related to this article sets forth the following examples as illustrative of the phenomena that could be caused by the use of such techniques. And then quoting directly from the document, earthquakes, note the first here, earthquakes, tsunamis, an upset in the ecological balance of a region, changes in weather patterns, clouds, precipitation, cyclones of various types, and tornadic storms, changes in climate patterns, changes in ocean currents, changes in the state of the ozone layer, and changes in the state of the ionosphere. So note again that the very first of the phenomena that could be caused by the use of environmental modification techniques, earthquakes. So again, if this sounds absolutely off the wall, that is to say the speculative line of inquiry that earthquake-causing technology might in fact be a reality, if that sounds preposterous to people, just bear in mind that that was one of the focal points of a treaty between the U.S. and the Soviet Union that was signed by the U.S. in May of 1977, more than 20 years ago. One of the people who has done some very excellent research in exploring, among other things, the possibility that a new weapon system might be used to cause earthquakes is Dr. Nick Begich, the author with Gene Manning of Angels Don't Play This Harp, and we're going to talk about that book in just a second. This past week, I received a fax from Dr. Begich, who got this particular text of a keynote address at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy that was held on April 28, 1997, at the Georgia Center Mahler Auditorium, that's M-A-H-L-E-R, at the University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia. In addition to Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen, the event also featured Sam Nunn and Senator Richard Lugar. Of course, Senator Sam Nunn, a senator from Georgia. And in discussing a number of possible environmental terrorism weapons, the use by terrorists of weapons of mass destruction, specifically in the context of a discussion of a false alarm in which the B'nai B'rith headquarters in Washington were the focal point of a bogus biological warfare attack. I shouldn't say bogus, but basically it was reported that biological weapons had been used at B'nai B'rith. In the context of that false alarm of a biological weapons attack on B'nai B'rith and a discussion of attendant matters, Secretary of Defense William Cohen had the following to say. By the way, the question that prompted this particular response was, let me ask you specifically about last week's scare here in Washington and what we might have learned from how prepared we are to deal with that inaudible at B'nai B'rith. And discussing the possibility that genetically engineered viruses, among other things, might be used as weapons of terrorism, Secretary of Defense Cohen spoke as follows. There are some reports, for example, that some countries have been trying to construct something like an Ebola virus, and that would be a very dangerous phenomenon, to say the least. Alvin Toffler has written about this in terms of some scientists in their laboratories trying to devise certain types of pathogens that would be ethnic-specific so that they could just eliminate certain ethnic groups and races. And others are designing some sort of engineering, some sort of insects that can destroy specific crops. By the way, I would note that ethno-specific biological weapons was the focal point of U.S. military BW research for a long time. That discussed, and among other programs, RFA-16, available from Spitfire. That is also discussed in the landmark book Emerging Viruses by Dr. Leonard Horowitz. Then, after the discussion that I've just set forth, Secretary of Defense Cohen had the following to say, and I listen very closely to this. Others, meaning other nations, other terrorist nations, others are engaging in an eco... Others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes or volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. One more time. Others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes or volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. This again in an address on April 28, 1997 by the Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen. This is one of the most concrete indications I have ever seen that, in fact, earthquake technology, not to mention other types of technology, environmental warfare technology, is in all probability operational. If, quote, terrorist nations, unquote, are developing this capability, it's a pretty good bet that the United States, which is the world leader in most types of military technology, has already got this type of technology, or else is more advanced in its R&D than these, quote, terrorist nations, unquote. Again, this sentence from William Cohen's address at a conference on terrorism and weapons of mass destruction and U.S. strategy at the University of Georgia, April 28, 1997. Others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. And again, that is... from the U.S. Secretary of Defense. So again, for people that say, well, that's ridiculous, that apparently it does not appear too ridiculous to the Secretary of Defense in 1997. By the way, Dr. Begich got this news briefing from a webpage, which is called Defense Link. I assume this is the Pentagon's webpage. You can obtain this. It says News Briefing, Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs. This is available from www.dtic.mil/defense link, one word, D-E-F-E-N-S-E, link, /news/April 97. Once again, www.dtic.mil/defense link, one word, /news/April 97. So, point your web browser in that direction and you can access that for yourselves. Now again, earthquake technology, or the capacity to trigger earthquakes, has long been a focal point of military R&D, both in this country and in the Soviet Union. And in January of 97, information came out indicating that the Soviets may very well have developed such technology in the late 1980s. My guess is that the same could be said of the United States. However, as yet, there is no concrete documentation of that. It's a pretty safe bet that if the Soviets were doing it, we were doing it, and indeed if terrorist nations are doing it in the late 1990s, it's a safe bet that we have the same capability. Research credit on this goes to a listener. This is from the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, then their issue of January and February of 1997. In the In Brief section, we read the following. I read this in another broadcast. This is entitled Tectonic Terror. Quote, "We don't think it is impossible or wrong, but past experience suggests it is very, very unlikely," unquote, said Roger Clark, a lecturer in geophysics at Leeds University, about the possibility of using underground nuclear explosions to cause artificial earthquakes. Nature, October 10, 1996. Clark was responding to a story in Moscow News purporting to reveal two secret Soviet programs, quote, Mercury, unquote, and, quote, Volcano, unquote, aimed at developing a tectonic weapon, unquote, that could set off earthquakes from great distances by manipulating electromagnetism. According to Nature, these programs had been, quote, unofficially known to Western geophysicists for several years, unquote. Most disturbing aspects of the story, the claim that the Mercury program began in 1987, that three tests were conducted in Kyrgyzstan, and that Volcano's last test occurred in 1992. By the way, I have theorized that the Armenian earthquake of 1988 may have been triggered by American earthquake, causing technology, perhaps in conjunction with a top-secret military mission of the space shuttle that was supposedly putting a reconnaissance satellite into orbit over the Soviet Union. Again, that was an entirely speculative item. However, this particular information indicates that the Soviets were actively developing this technology in the late 1980s. Again, such technology was the focal point of a treaty between the U.S. and the former Soviet Union in the late 1970s, and the United States as well had been working on earthquake developing technology as well, or at least researching it for a long time. Earlier, I made reference to Dr. Nick Begich, along with Gene Manning, the co-author of Angels Don't Play This Harp. That's H-A-A-R-P, subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology. This refers to Project HARP, something I've discussed in a couple of interviews with Dr. Begich, those available from Spitfire. HARP is referred to as an RMA, a revolution in military affairs. It's sort of an all-in-one military system that has a number of reconnaissance and mass destructive capabilities. Angels Don't Play This Harp, subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology, was co-authored by Gene Manning, M-A-N-N-I-N-G, and Dr. Nick Begich, B-E-G-I-C-H, published in softcover by the Earth Pulse Press. Their mailing address is P.O. Box 201-393. That's P.O. Box 201-393, Anchorage, Alaska, 99520, USA. The ISBN number of the book is 0-964-8812-0-9, and it's copyright 1995. In discussing Project HARP and some of the secret, some of the clandestine military R&D that had been engaged in for quite some time, including environmental weaponry, Dr. Begich and Gene Manning write as follows in Angels Don't Play This HARP. For example, the rainmaking technology was taken for a few test rides in Vietnam. The U.S. Department of Defense sampled lightning and hurricane manipulation studies in Project Skyfire and Project Storm Fury. And they looked at some complicated technologies that would give big effects. Lowell Ponte, P-O-N-T-E, author of The Cooling, says the military studied both lasers and chemicals, which they figured could damage the ozone layer over an enemy. Looking at ways to cause earthquakes, as well as to detect them, was part of the project codenamed Prime Argus decades ago. The money for that came from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, now under the acronym ARPA. So again, our Prime Argus was basically an R&D project looking for ways to cause earthquakes. I'm also going to review an article that appeared in the New York Times, specifically on January 21st of 1997. I've read this also in a previous broadcast, and research credit on this goes to a listener. This is by William J. Broad of the New York Times. It's entitled Seismic Mystery in Australia, Quake, Meteor, or Nuclear Blast. The article reads in part as follows, and again, this is the New York Times, January 21st, 1997. Late on the evening of May 28, 1993, something shattered the calm of the Australian outback and radiated shockwaves outward across hundreds of miles of scrub and desert. Around the same time, truck drivers crossing the region and gold prospectors camping nearby saw the dark sky illuminated by bright flashes, and they and other people heard the distant rumble of loud explosions. The mysterious event might have been lost to history except for the interest of government investigators in Australia and the United States, who eventually came to wonder if the upheaval was the work of the Japanese doomsday cult accused of the poison gas attack on Tokyo subways in 1995 that killed 12 people and hurt thousands. The fear was that the terrorists had acquired nuclear arms or other weapons of mass destruction and had been testing them that night in the Australian wilds. The hope was that the upheaval was an earthquake, a mining explosion, or even a meteorite strike from space, any natural event. The evidence was ominous. Investigators discovered that the cult, Aum Shinrikyo, had tried to buy Russian nuclear weapons and had set up an advanced laboratory on a 500,000-acre ranch in Australia near the puzzling upheaval. At the ranch, investigators found that the sect had been mining uranium, a main material for making atomic bombs. The clues were judged worrisome enough to set in motion a wide scientific investigation that is still going on today. And skipping down in the article, after talking about the possibility that this might have been a nuclear test by the Aum Shinrikyo cult, the article goes on to say, but the signature of the disturbance seemed to be more that of an earthquake or a meteorite strike than a nuclear explosion. Typically, the shockwaves from nuclear blasts begin with a very distinct wave or spike as earth and rock are violently compressed. The signal then tends to become more fuzzy as surface rumblings and shudders and aftershocks create a seismologic din. With earthquakes, it is usually the opposite, with gentle jostling suddenly becoming much bigger and more violent. The main problem for analysis of the mystery event is that such clear distinctions tend to break down when the size of the disturbance under study is relatively small, as was the case in the Australian outback. Nevertheless, the IRIS experts judged that the violent episode was probably natural in character rather than being a man-made blast, prompting official Washington to breathe a sigh of relief. No mention of the seismic riddle was made in well-publicized hearings that Senator Nunn ran in late October and early November of 1995 on Aum Shinrikyo, as a case study of what fanatics with large financial resources can do to acquire weapons of mass destruction. And skipping down still further in the article, still one remote but we're still worrisome possibility remained. Aum Shinrikyo had apparently studied seismic warfare and artificially triggering earthquakes, a terrifying prospect for quake-prone Japan. The cult apparently sent a party of its members to the former Yugoslavia to study the work of Nikola Tesla, the discoverer of alternating current, who toyed with the theory of seismic weapons before he died in 1943. At the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, the members seem to have reviewed Tesla's thesis and other research papers concerning such weapons. Many geophysicists view seismic warfare as a fantasy that is highly unlikely to ever materialize. By the way, I would take that with a great deal of salt for reasons that will become clear in a few minutes or perhaps in the next segment. Even so, the subject has been quietly studied for decades by governments worldwide, including the Soviet Union and the United States during the Cold War. So IRIS investigators kept pressing ahead to solve the Australian riddle, trying to determine if the event was an earthquake or a meteor strike. The team worked with computers and lengthy calculations, eventually showing that an iron meteorite striking the Earth at an oblique angle could have created the seismic upset. A meteorite 5 or 6 feet wide would have dug out a crater some 300 feet in diameter, the team calculated. Despite preliminary searches, no impact crater has been found in the Australian outback. In the next half-hour segment, we're going to discuss the work of Nikola Tesla, who created a small earthquake in New York City in 1896. One should be aware that national security matters are always guarded by what Winston Churchill in World War II referred to as a bodyguard of lies. And the fact of the matter is, the potential to cause earthquakes has been known for a long time, for about 100 years or so. Now, the reference in that New York Times article, again, January 21st of 1997, was to the Aum Shinrikyo cult. The Aum Shinrikyo cult was the focal point of an excellent book, arguably the best book on this particular subject, and one that I would recommend to people who'd like to find out about Aum Shinrikyo. This particular book is entitled The Cult at the End of the World. It's co-authored by David E. Kaplan, K-A-P-L-A-N, and Andrew Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, subtitled The Terrifying Story of the Aum Doomsday Cult, From the Subways of Tokyo to the Nuclear Arsenals of Russia. The book was published in hardcover by Crown Books. It is copyrighted, I believe, 1996. Going to double-check this in a second. Yes, copyright 1996, and the ISBN number is 0-517-70543-5. Again, The Cult at the End of the World, co-authored by David E. Kaplan and Andrew Marshall. Excellent book about the Aum Shinrikyo cult. And in Chapter 31, there is speculative discussion concerning Aum Shinrikyo and the Kobe earthquake. At 5:46 a.m. on January 17, 1995, an earthquake of awesome power struck Kobe in central Japan. 15 seconds was all it took to transform a thriving port city of 1.5 million people into a scene from hell. Expressways cracked and toppled, apartment blocks crumbled or sank into the liquefied earth. Huge fireballs cut swaths through entire neighborhoods, burning those still trapped beneath the rubble. As lists of the dead scrolled endlessly over television screens nationwide, emergency services struggled to cope with Japan's worst disaster since World War II. Over 5,500 people perished in the Great Hanshin earthquake. Tens of thousands more lost their relatives, friends, homes, and everything they owned. But for Shoko Asahara, by the way, he's the guru and head of this cult, but for Shoko Asahara, the Kobe quake was no tragedy. Quite the opposite. It was a godsend. The disaster, which the guru later claimed to have predicted, benefited the cult in several vital ways. As Kobe became the number one national priority, the attention of both Japanese authorities and the media was diverted from Aum. The apocalyptic scenes from Kobe also confirmed for cultists their guru's prediction of impending doom, as well as exposing how ill-prepared the government was when faced with a major crisis. Asahara's status as prophet was boosted, and his sense of invincibility began to return. By the way, I noted in a lecture entitled The Future, Technology, Theocracy, and the Thousand-Year Reich, that environmental modification, technology, and various other types of secret technology would at some point be coupled with various types of religion in order to produce a worldwide fascist theocracy sometime in the next century. And again, that lecture is available from Spitfire. I've also alluded to the Japanese government's inadequate response to the Kobe earthquake as one of the factors, along with the Aum Shinrikyo gas attacks, that helped to destabilize the first conservative socialist government in the post-World War II period. That was the first government was not formed by the Liberal Democratic Party, which, by the way, was supported by the CIA in the post-World War II period. And the Aum Shinrikyo cult, as mentioned in that New York Times article, had studied Nikola Tesla's technology, and indeed Hideo Murai, M-U-R-A-I, the scientific expert and weapons developer for the Aum Shinrikyo cult, maintained that the Kobe earthquake had been caused by Japan's enemies, probably the United States. Continuing with the cult at the end of the world. For Asahara, the great Hanshin earthquake was stunning proof of the coming apocalypse. Hideo Murai, however, did not believe the quake was an act of God. He was a scientist, after all, and scientists have rational explanations. Quote, there is a strong possibility that the great Hanshin earthquake was activated by electromagnetic power or some other device that exerts energy into the ground, unquote, Murai later told an assembly of international reporters. This device, he added, was possibly operated by the U.S. military. Murai's attempts to explain further were drowned out by derisive snorts from reporters. A device capable of triggering massive seismic movements sounded hopelessly sci-fi and far-fetched. But as it turned out, Aum wasn't the first to be fascinated by the idea. Quote, Nikoratesura, N-I-K-O-R-A-T-E-S-U-R-A, is the closest Japanese rendering of Nikola Tesla, 1856 to 1943, the brilliant Croatian-American who invented the AC motor and pioneered radio and remote control. Tesla studied the possibility of transmitting electric energy over long distances by taking advantage of electromagnetic waves emitted by the Earth, in effect, using the planet itself as a giant wireless conductor. In 1899 at Colorado Springs, Tesla lit hundreds of lamps about 25 miles away using a large induction coil, a device that produces an electric current by changing magnetic fields. He afterwards claimed that the same method could in theory be used to send a signal through the Earth which could be picked up on the other side. Nikola Tesla's remarkable mind led him to a field we now know as telegeodynamics. Here, his theories grow extraordinary. He believed that by manipulating the Earth's electromagnetic forces, one could dramatically affect both climate and seismic activity. Tesla warned that his discovery could split the planet in two, quote, split it as a boy would split an apple, and forever end the career of man, unquote. Although many geologists dismiss this notion as comic book nonsense, recent research has shown that earthquakes are predicted by unusual emissions of low-frequency electromagnetic waves produced by small cracks in lower layers of plates in the Earth's crust. Tesla's ideas were in fact taken very seriously by both the U.S. and Soviet militaries. Portions of his paper seized by the U.S. government after his death remain classified even today. Some U.S. experts reportedly believe the Soviets used a seismic weapon to trigger an earthquake in Beijing in 1977. An earthquake machine. It is not hard to imagine how much the idea excited Hideo Murai. He wanted to know more, and that's where the six members of the Japan Secret Nikola Tesla Association came in. A month after the Kobe quake, the members began a series of trips to the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, Serbia, where many of the inventor's papers are kept. There, they searched for data on seismology and electromagnetism. Meanwhile, the cult's New York office contacted the International Tesla Society in the U.S., asking for information on Tesla's inventions, patents, and writings. The Kobe tremor may have been an act of God. Hideo Murai was determined that Japan's next earthquake would be an act of Aum. We're going to continue with the discussion of earthquake technology and Nikola Tesla in the next half-hour segment. I made reference to other broadcasts dealing with this subject. Those are available from Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word, P.O. Box 1179, that is in Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. The email address, alcalame@ix.netcom.com. That concludes this broadcast. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.